Thank you to our sponsors, Class Central. It's been more than half a decade since free online courses from Stanford kicked off the modern MOOC or massive online open courses movement. Since then, more than 700 universities around the world have launched MOOCs, used by over 60 million people. Gaining insight into this fast-paced world is worth spending time on, especially for those implicated by such changes. That's where Class Central comes in. Class Central launched at the end of 2011 and has kept track of the MOOC space right from the beginning. Not only does it list 7,000 plus courses, but the excellent MOOC Report blog has deep analysis on what's up, down, new, or just slightly left field. With over 500 articles written, Class Central has the most comprehensive coverage of the MOOC industry. You can go and check that out at www.class-central.com/report and let me know what you think. Everyone, welcome to the EdTech Podcast, the show about education innovation in and out of the classroom. This week, we're in conversation with Ronaldo Lawrence. Ronaldo is an Adobe Education Leader, an Apple Distinguished Educator, a Microsoft Innovative Educator, and an Advanced Skills Teacher. He holds a Master's in Education and currently works as an e-learning creator at Chiswick School in West London. Before we get into Ronaldo's motivational podcast, a few quick announcements. First up, hello to everyone I met this week at Future EdTech and a podcast forthcoming on that focus for higher education and education technology. I look forward also to meeting many of you at London EdTech Week next week. The EdTech Podcast's very own event on Is EdTech a Thing?, a live podcast in collaboration with Nesta and supported by Cooley, takes place as part of London EdTech Week on Monday the 19th of June and looks at how we should value EdTech from an educator, legal and investor perspective. It's free, but you do need to register and the links are in the show notes. Back on the higher ed focus, I'll also be chairing an event on everyone's favourite topic of the moment, GDPR. Full Fabrics event, also part of London EdTech Week, takes place at Imperial College on the 22nd of June. And finally, the Association for Learning Technology annual conference takes place the 5th to the 7th of September at the University of Liverpool, UK, bringing together practitioners, researchers and policymakers from across the sectors. To find out more about any of these events, check the links in the show notes at theedtechpodcast.libsyn.com. Now on to this week's show. This recording was conducted last year and after a long delay is finally on the podcast. Big thank you to Ronaldo for his patience whilst I fiddled around with some technicalities. You'll hear Ronaldo's thoughts on funding in schools, motivating students and taking inspiration from outside the classroom to enthuse your practice. But there's basketball, tool recommendations and a big reminder that relationships are where to start whatever you're doing. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Class Central, and have a great week, everyone.
Yay! Hey.
Hi, is that Ronaldo?
Yes, it is. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, thank you. Absolutely fantastic.
So I'm really excited. It's Friday, and I'm here on the EdTech Podcast with Ronaldo Lawrence. So Ronaldo, welcome.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So just to go right back to the beginning, so can you tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are and what you do? And then I also want to go into your master's in education, but we can talk about that afterwards.
Sure. Sure. Okay. I have been in this country for a while. I was drafted by Clippers. I went to a school called Appalachian State University where I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship. I came out with a teaching degree, but I then spent the next 13, 14 years of my life traveling the world playing basketball. And I ended up here, and I'm extremely fortunate to have two really wonderful children, and I know everybody says that, but I have a son who played in the 2012 Olympics, and he just finished playing in the European Championships, and he's now in Kosovo. I have a daughter who works for Microsoft, or for Expedia. They're owned by Microsoft. And obviously my wife is here. And the things that I do is I work in a school in London called Chiswick School. And what my job is that I work with teachers and I create interactive content based around their curriculum. The students can access the content on the different devices, such as the iPads. I'm an author, a lynda.com LinkedIn Learning author. So I create courses based around primarily using digital tools in the classroom to better enhance the students' experiences of learning. And I am starting to take out a new career, which is becoming a voiceover artist. So I'm doing quite a bit.
So we should be very privileged to have you on the podcast and listening to your voice.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm honored to be here. Trust me, I've heard a lot about you. And from my friends and Mark Martin, the urban teacher, speaks extremely highly of you. And I just couldn't wait to have an opportunity to talk to you, if I'm honest with you.
Well, I know we've been exchanging lots of messages for a long while. So I'm also happy that we finally got the chance to connect. And I guess you're one of those people that I can tell, even though we haven't met in person, that you're an interesting character. And so I'm intrigued to find out more. And on that side, which part of this, I'm guessing you're from the States.
Yeah, I'm from South Carolina.
Yeah.
From South Carolina, where it is like really green and really beautiful and the streets are big and entrepreneurship is ripe.
Yeah. And that's what drew you to West London, where the street, you know, it's green, you've got Richmond Park, streets are nice and wide.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I live in Woking in Surrey, I drive up to Chiswick every day.
Yeah.
London is a very interesting place. London is one of my most favorite places in the world, and you can see all different types of people. You can do all different types of things, and England is quite, you know, different from the United States.
Yeah.
So I cherish the moments that I'm able to go back to the States. And it's very different, you know, it's just very different countries.
Yeah, and interesting times there coming up, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, really interesting time. But I think there is one thing I can say, it has made people reevaluate themselves mm-hmm. and what they mm-hmm. believe in. It's made people reevaluate the country itself. And if I'm honest, I just hope that they have reevaluated enough to know that maybe we should have our first female president.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, awesome. And then, so what I'm really intrigued in, obviously both you and your son have a real talent for basketball. So you went through your basketball and then found yourself doing a master's and a degree in education. So how did that come about? And also, my most pressing question on that is, you know, do you think that having a degree in education is important anymore for leaders, given the pace of change and the pressures on educational leadership and this idea of digital leadership?
Yeah, you know, I've always said that I have been extremely fortunate to get a scholarship to play basketball. And by having that scholarship, what I didn't realize at the time, but it was just pushing me in the direction for what I do now. It was preparing me for what I do now. Basketball has allowed me to see the world, allowed me to meet a lot of different people, and allowed me to come up with a lot of different concepts from what is happening around the world in order to sort of create and form my own vision of where I think I should be and where I think education should be. One of the things that I think is extremely important when people look now back at the value of an education, you know, I used to wonder, why the heck did we all have to go to school and do this or do that? But I tell you, once you've gone through and done your master's or done any formal education, you understand how important it is because it does help you to think more logically. It gives you a better way of sort of understanding who you are in that space and time. And I think the master's in education, I think it's extremely relevant. But I think what needs to happen with that I am not sure is happening, is technology needs to be brought into that teaching.
Yeah.
Because having gone and seen what's happening in a lot of schools, a lot of the programs, teacher programs, do not teach the effective use of digital technology within the schools. And I can understand that because it's very difficult to find people who actually are able to keep up with all the different types of technology that, that makes its way on the scene each and every day. So as a leader in a school, I think you need to make sure that your priorities are set and you know where you're going for your school, and then try not to veer off that course. Because I tell you, it's very easy to veer off. And with the issues of teachers coming in and teachers leaving schools, heads leaving schools, different people coming in, and it takes a while to get anything established. So it can be a very difficult thing in order to permeate technology throughout. And then you look at the other issue that I have personally with what's going on in schools is, you know, a lot of the machines that we have are not up to the task. Mm-hmm. And I just believe that the government needs to work more with schools in order to fund schools to be able to purchase these devices for students. You know, and if we're also brutally honest about it, we have a lot of kids who do not have the economic means of keeping up with everybody else. And it is very unfair. And I know it's very difficult because I know companies need to make money in order to survive. But I also always think back to what the heck are we going to do? If you got all the money in the world and you got a population that's uneducated and a population that doesn't know what the right thing to do. You know, so we have a huge burden, I feel, that's been placed on us in order to try to get education right. And I just think that sometimes we're not. I mean, if you look recently what has happened where the government has taken out the ICT course, and now, you know, they just did a survey and found that maybe it was the wrong thing to do. Mm. And I just beg to differ whether when these guys are actually getting ready to make concrete decisions about all of these kids' lives, because I do sometimes think that they use these kids as guinea pig, you know, with the political spear. I wonder whether they talk to teachers who are in some of these schools that are not as fortunate as some other schools, because then you can actually find out what's really going on in schools. You know, and I just think that sometimes some of the politicians, they look at schools that are doing well, and you need to look at the schools that are not doing well, you know, and I think that's where we're sort of hurting our kids. I really do.
Interesting. So, I mean, do you have a sense of how the politics plays out in the US and across Europe? Because I know that you do sort of work outside of the UK as well.
I think everybody has issues. But I think where it has actually worked right is where you have all of the teachers working together with parents and then working together with students. And I think it all starts with, you know, year seven. And I think it all starts with manners. I think it all starts with teaching students how to treat each other, teaching you know, teachers how to work with students, students how to work with teachers. You know, so it's a huge thing that I think that we need to sort of step back and look at. And I also think that a part of the problem, and I can understand why we do it in some ways, but a part of the problem is now in some ways that if you are failing school, you know, the finances are not what they used to be. Mm-hmm. And if you are a very successful school and you know how to bid for a lot of the money, you can bid for a lot of the money and your school can continue to prosper. You know, whereas a lot of the other schools, you know, they're not. You know, in California, which used to be an awful school system, they have really improved. I mean, I think I got one of my friends who is leading up one of the major projects there, and they have an astronomical sum of money to invest in education now, and they started investing in education, and they're noticing a huge, you know, lift in terms of how they're able to deliver the curriculum. And it starts with money. You need some money when you're talking about technology in order to buy the right devices. You can say that the issue would be that, well, if you buy these devices in 2 or 3 years, that they will go out of date. Well, that's the nature of everything. But what do? Not buy them because they're going to go out of date?
Yeah, it's like, you know, so I mean, I know you're on lynda.com, but it's like the same argument that, you know, you don't invest in your staff's professional development or training, you know, whether they're in schools or in other industry companies, because they may leave. But, it, you know, what happens if you don't invest in that? You know, what kind of team and professional capability have you got then? So
And, you know, I remember the time where when you were in school and you wanted to go out to a course, mm-hmm. it was something that you could actually do and not feel that guilty about it. Now, with the budgets the way they are, it's almost impossible sometimes to go out to different courses. You know, so a teacher now and anybody in the workforce, you need to start training yourself and you need to start teaching yourself how to learn. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to start with lynda.com is because I wanted to provide materials for teachers who are out there who wanted simple ways to start using technology in the classroom. Mm. We have a lot of materials that I've created based around using PowerPoint, based around using some of the higher-end technologies like Articulate Storyline, based around using video in the classroom, based around using all the Adobe tools, you know, and based around even using something like Audacity to edit stuff. So we have a lot of materials there. And I just think that, you know, with the way things are now, as a teacher, if you want to improve yourself, you've got to. And sometimes I don't know where you find the time, but you've got to find the time to improve yourself and to learn new things. Because if you're waiting for your employer to do it, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I met with a learning trust a couple of weeks ago, and they were sort of saying about, you know, how times are tough. You know, whereas perhaps previously they would have provided the CPD report around, you know, devices and so on. Now the schools have kind of all taken that back in-house. And, you know, as a result, it's very inconsistent. And the picture that I got was, you know, we've gone back to that function being more a distributor function, and actually the kit sort of being dropped off. And that's the last you hear about it, which, you know, yeah. You're never going to get the best out of technology if it's delivered in that way. So
in some ways, I think we've gone backwards, you know. But, you know, in terms of learning, there's really no excuses for anybody not to learn these days. Because even if you don't want to use a premium service like LinkedIn Learning or lynda.com, YouTube is there. You know, you can find just about anything you want to learn on YouTube. You know, Google is there. You can search for just about anything that you're trying to learn on, you know, using Google. I'm trying to learn now how to be a videographer, you know, and all of my training has come from YouTube.
Yeah.
And there are some excellent tutorials there. And one of the great things is now people want to share their knowledge. And that's amazing. So, you know, take advantage of it.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's like several lifetimes worth of content out there, and it's almost then deciding, well, which is the skill that I want to spend my time on. But also, you know, if it is about teachers, how do they carve that time out? And I think you know, it does come down to personal time and whether there's an appetite and for those sort of self-starter teachers, do they actually think, well, if I'm going to apply myself within this, do I leave the profession because I'm not sure that this skill, if I develop it in my own personal time, will be appreciated? So I don't know what you think about that.
No, that's an amazing point, because I do believe that if you're not able to boost yourself, if you're not able to praise yourself, teaching sometimes can be a soul-destroying thing. Mm. Because a lot of times when you're in the classroom, you know, and I think what happens with schools these days is you get some of the grades and then you look at some of the students who are supposed to get these grades that they've given you and you think, huh? You know, so then you've got to find a way to try to help those kids succeed. And, you know, this is a little controversial what I'm about to say, but school is not the all to be all. You know, not everybody succeeds in school to the point where they are extremely successful. You know, a lot of people, school is not the right thing for them. So when they get out, they're extremely successful because they're doing what they really want to do.
Yeah.
And I think to me, that's one of the keys in life is to try to find a profession, to try to find something that you really love to do that you can, you know, get paid for. And yes, it is easier said than done. But what other choice do you have? You know, so, I mean, it's an individual thing. And, you know, everybody has to take care of themselves. And no longer can you wait for anybody to do anything for you. You know, you have to pick up the gauntlet and run with it yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, and running with it starts with teaching yourself how to do things. Running with it starts with using all the free resources that's out there. But I think running with it starts with knowing what the heck you want to do. Because if you don't know what you want to do, it's impossible to get started. You know, so you have to know where you want to go.
And you only find out what you want to do by just trying different things as well. So there's no...
I still don't know what I want to do, you know, and I'm doing what I'm doing now. But I have an idea where my place is in the world. And as a young person, it's very difficult to sort of know where you're at in the world, because there's so many things coming at you at 100 miles an hour with all the technology, with all the news feeds and everything. You know, it's impossible sometimes to know where you're at. But, you know, you've got to figure it out, because if you don't figure it out, you'll be swallowed up.
And when you were growing up, what was your experience of education like?
I was really fortunate because I was not exactly starting off the best student in the world, because school wasn't interesting to me, because the stuff that we were learning in some of the classes, I couldn't see any application of it in the real world for me. But then when I was in the ninth grade, I used to play saxophone. And saxophone was really nice. And I had a guy called Mr. Creekmore. And Mr. Creekmore used to play. He was the head of the band. And he was the first guy who actually took me out of South Carolina and showed us what was possible for our lives. And I had another guy, Mr. Oscar Dason, who was a basketball coach, who used to open the gym up for us every night, every weekend night, about 8:30. And what used to happen is, because the gyms were open, we were there till 12 o'clock. And what I didn't realize until I went to see him when I was home in the summer is that he opened the gym, closing that late, because by the time you got home to take a shower and go to the clubs were closed. So he was essentially saving a lot of kids' lives and stopping kids from being out there drinking, stopping kids from being out there on drugs and whatever. You know, so those two individuals, along with my parents, played a major part in who I am today. And I tell you what, every single summer I go back and I take them out to dinner and I thank them, because it's only now that I'm older do I realize the impact that they've really had on my life, you know? And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to now do for other kids what they did for me. Like, one of the things we do now is my friend Matt Mead, who's the head of education at Chelsea, we run a camp where we have a lot of kids who come over and they get a chance to learn how to use various computer applications in the morning. And then they do football in the afternoon, and they get a chance for a tour around Chelsea. You know, this is giving students opportunities that they would no way have the ability to view these places or to visit these places. And we're also looking at starting a lot of other camps, you know, but with education being the primary thing that's done in the morning and sports in the afternoon.
I love that. I love the mix, you know, the mix between, because there's so much negative press about, oh, you know, screen time and all of this. But actually, I love the mix of doing something really engaged in the morning, maybe around technology, and then just going out and getting all your, blasting your lungs in the afternoon.
Yeah, happy mind, happy body.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think, you know, if I think back now to when my son was coming up here, and I was so fortunate that one of my best friends here used to play at the, he was a coach at the American school. So for a period there of about a year, my son played for the Chelsea Football Club. But what then happened was he had times where there's nothing to do. So they were hanging in the streets doing nothing on like Fridays. And, you know, so we have a lot of kids like that, because if you try to pay for anything here as a child, it's very expensive. Hell, as an adult, it's expensive. But as a child, it's really expensive. So, you know, you can't say, okay, we want to go, even two or three kids, we want to rent this basketball court for this period of time, because they can't afford it. So, you know, he was very fortunate to be in that situation. And so that's the kind of thing what I'm trying to do now for a lot of other kids, are trying to give them a way out. And, all that matters is that they feel that they love, that there's something that they can do, and that there's somebody that cares about them. That's the bottom line, that there's somebody that genuinely cares about them and doesn't want anything from them. You know, just want them to stay out of the streets, want them to get a good education, and want them to be good, productive people.
That's awesome. And just with lynda.com, if people are listening in and they, you know, they feel inspired and think, actually, yeah, I want to access some resources that might help me improve my practice and that kind of thing. What's the model there? Is it free or do they pay, or is it a bit like TES resources in that way? Or
No, it's not a free service. It's a premium service. So you're able to watch some of the content for free. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. Like about, I think it came to equivalent of like $1 a day, you know, like £25 a month.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? By the time you bought a coffee mm-hmm. every day during the week at Starbucks, hell, you could pay for a month, you know? So I think, let me put it like this. It is what you want to do with yourself. It's what you want to do with your time. It's how much you want to invest in yourself. And it's all about you investing in you. And if you can't afford it, then like I said, man, there's YouTube. There's a lot of other places you can go. But Lynda and LinkedIn Learning, which is the new platform from LinkedIn, I think they have a lot of content. And regardless of what you want to be, they have tracks for that. And what's really interesting about it is that they have tracks where if you want to be, say, like a graphic designer, they have a bunch of courses that they have curated that teaches you how to be a graphic designer. So whatever you want to be, you know, they have courses for that. I get an opportunity to fly to the States to go in the studio, and these are, I've never worked with an organization more professionally in my life. I wrote an article about it, the 10 things that every company should learn from Lynda.com. They are some amazing people. And I've never seen a learning environment where everybody helps everybody out, where it doesn't matter what job you do, if you can learn something from the next person, they do. It is just a phenomenal environment. So I quite enjoy that.
So one of my questions was, what's the worst situation you've seen in e-learning and the best?
I would have to say probably that the worst situation I've seen is where you got a bunch of eager learners and the machines don't work. You know, there are teachers planned lessons for he or she and, you know, the young children, and they get in there, and then you have even one student who's not able to access what they want to access. It sort of destroys it for me. So that's the worst thing. I think the best thing is I've seen is when you got kids who are fully engaged, and the content is based around what they want to learn, you know, and they're interested in the content. To me, that's what it's about. Because I do think a lot of what schools are about is teaching students how to learn. But I do think a lot of the stuff that we teach them, I haven't used a lot of that stuff ever, but I have learned how to learn. And I think that's the important thing. You know, in my personal opinion, I just think a lot of the stuff that we teach in schools is just a waste of time. And that's my personal opinion.
So it's not necessarily about, you know, ticking off all these things that you need to regurgitate, but it's more about the process of having to be patient or having to work with other people.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of learning how to learn, but learning also how to remember things. But I don't think, you know, some of the stuff that we're asking kids to remember, I just think it's a waste of time. When I can pick up my phone, in 2 seconds I can find it. And I can find something that's going to help me be an entrepreneur, where I can create jobs for other people or other students, or something that's going to help me to help somebody else, you know? And like I say, you know, it could be controversial, but hey, it's my opinion.
And in terms of the future of technology, is there anything that excites you? So things that are coming through that you think actually that could be really phenomenal, or are you a bit more hesitant to get too excited?
Oh, no. Let me tell you something. I'm excited every day. I spent the majority of my day, and you might think this is a joke, but I spend the majority of my days teaching myself all the Adobe stuff, teaching myself all the Articulate stuff, teaching myself how to use a camera, because I just think that it is great to be really specific in what you want to learn. And I just think as an educator, one of the things that I have to do is I have to be able to know how to do and how to use different pieces of software. And to me, I think that's crucial. And it's crucial for my own survival, because if I'm not learning, then I'm wasting my time and I just don't feel productive. So I think that it is extremely important that all the stuff that is happening now, that if you don't know how to do it, at least you have some sort of idea. And a lot of my ideas come from things like Fortune magazine, Fast Company magazine, you know, magazines like these. And one of the things that I've done for myself is I've created me a mastermind group. And this mastermind group, these people don't know me from Adam. but I follow them a lot, and I just see what they're doing. You know, people like Eric Thomas, Anthony Robbins, you know, I just follow them a lot to see what they're doing, because I just think that you'll never know what nugget you might find that somebody else is doing that can enhance your workflow.
Interesting, interesting. And so is that like a list on Twitter?
Yeah, I do. I have them and I follow them, but I also follow them on Facebook, also follow them on Instagram. So I follow them on all the different platforms that they're on, because, you know, you'll be surprised that, for instance, I just got my copy of Fortune magazine through today, you know, and I love it. And there's another book that I'm reading right now. It's called Work Smart by Betty Lou. Okay. And she's the lady that's on Bloomberg. So I think it's about being as diverse as you can in your reading, you know, and seeing as much stuff. And, you know, another book that I'm reading right now is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. That gives me a completely different perspective on a different side of what I'm doing, you know. And I've learned so much about some of the stuff that he did, you know, when he was selling shoes out of the back of his car, you know, to how I can integrate that. But I think, you know, all the stuff that I read, if you can find and use it to interest the students in what you're doing, yeah, I think that's amazing. You know, I think that's amazing. And I think the first thing that, you know, that I tend to like to do is find out things about the kids themselves. Mm. And when I find out things about the kids themselves, then I've got something that I know they like. And undoubtedly, something in some book that I read that will help me with that relationship, you know, to help me to try to help those students be successful. You know, but I think the bottom line is that you have to care about them first. And when I first started teaching, I was so worried about getting the assignment done or getting the materials done. Well, if you don't care about me, why should I do that, even though I know it's for me? You know, so I've found that being a real human being to the students will allow the students to feel like you're a real human being, and then they will come around and they want to do the work for you. And undoubtedly, you know, a lot of books, like I have books like The Magic of Thinking Big. I have books like, you know, all kinds of books that I constantly dip in and out all the time, because, you know, the mind is something else. If you're not conscious of what you're thinking, your subconscious mind will just tell you anything. So you got to control your mind. You got to control what you're thinking. And the only way that I've found to do that is by putting a lot of positive stuff in my mind daily, from the time I get up in the morning to the time I go to bed at night.
That's really interesting what you said about being a human being to the students. You know, that's a charge that sometimes is used to critique using technology in the classroom, that, you know, it will just become students sat in front of devices, or that the role of the teacher will become more remote. Whereas actually there's other ways that, you know, actually you can use devices or content that's digital to engage in that human way. And actually when you think about just even simple applications like Skype, or, you know, the ability to have that human connection. Now, I was speaking to a lady earlier in China, just, you know, and it was so easy. And actually that can be, and we're talking now, and that is very human. That's very much about getting to know people. And so, yeah, it's never black and white, is it?
It is never black and white. And the world is about relationships. And everything is about relationships. And regardless of what you do, it starts with attention and it starts with relationships. And so if you don't have concrete relationships with these students, they might succeed, but I don't think they will succeed in ways that they could or can succeed. And I think it's about making them feel as comfortable as possible within your environment in the school, and also letting them have a voice. You know, it is important that these kids have a voice. And then sometimes you have to, you know when that voice, or they have to know when that voice is allowed to be, you know, vocalized. But, you know, they need to have a voice. They need to give their opinion. They need to feel as though they're comfortable within the environment. And sometimes it's tough, you know, depending on the schools you're at. You know, sometimes it's really tough. But, you know, if you don't, what's the other alternative? That they come to your class, they don't really want to be there, that you find it very difficult to get work out of them. And I just, you know, I just feel that when I walk in a class during the day, you know, I want kids to feel comfortable. You know, I want them to feel as though they can come and say anything they want to me within reason. And I just want them to feel as though, you know, sir really cares about me. You know, and to me, that's the bottom line, that they think that I really genuinely care about them. Because if they think that I care about them, I know they care about me. And then we got that human connectivity, which I think what everything is about.
And what's Chiswick School like? So just trying to imagine the environment you're in when you're in those classrooms.
Well, I teach IT, so we have various rooms there where we come in and the students come in. And one of the things that I personally always try to do, which is why I'm grading these assignments, I think what education needs to be is the students need to be independent. So students need to know where they're at, what they need to do, and where they need to go with their assignments or whatever coursework they're doing. So it's important to me to try to, you know, grade as much of this stuff as possible so when they get it back, they don't have to constantly ask me, what do I need to do next? Because I think a huge part, although we say, yes, these kids are digital kids and these kids are doing this and that, kids don't read. A lot of kids don't read these days. You know, you can have a three lines in three sentences and some of them will not read it for what they need to do. So you need to learn their language and try to use their language when you're talking to them. And then try to get them to understand that it's important that they become independent. And one of the things that I always preach to them is about how, you know, why would you want to work for somebody else? You know, why not become somebody who's an entrepreneur? You know, don't just throw the idea out the window. Just at least think about it, you know, think about it at least, you know. So,
what age are they?
I teach from year 7 all the way up to year 12. And I really prefer teaching the older kids because I feel as though I have so much more value to give the older kids. So that's about what, 11 to 15, 14, 15 years old. But I feel that I have a real bond with the older kids because mm-hmm. I think I can relate to them much better. They can relate to me much better. And I think because it depends when they get to that age, so much is so important on what they do with their lives that I like having a hand in helping them form, you know, what's going to be primarily the beginning of the rest of their lives.
I mean, we had Carno on the episode a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about they do Google Hangouts with kids to sort of connect them with all the expertise in their office. So they show them, like, this guy is a games designer, used to work at PlayStation, or da da da. So, yeah, if they are ever looking out for those kind of things, then we have to see what
we can do. Yeah, I think that's part of the issues that we have and the part of the problems that we have, because I think what happens with our kids, because of the coursework and the type of, you know, the coursework that they have to do, sometimes you don't have the opportunity to do some of that stuff and the stuff that really matters, that you let them see what's happening in the outside world, you know? And I think that's the real stuff. And I also think it's sort of crazy now that that students can't, that they have to write everything. You know, some students are much better vocalizing what they want to say and expressing themselves through video. And we can't really submit that kind of stuff to boards, you know, where kids can say, okay, I'm not turning in my work as in this written piece of work. I'm going to do a video which explains what I did, the reason behind why I've done it, and show you how I've done it. You know, to me, that's so much more powerful, you know, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, and, you know, I can see the relation to vlogging and just, the medium.
Yeah, because when you go out in the real world, you know, the bottom line is that you need to know what you're going to do. The bottom line is that you need to know how to communicate with people. The bottom line is that you need to be able to express yourself articulately, you know, and be able to actually let people know what's going on within the environment that you're in terms of the job that you're supposed to do for everybody else. And a lot of that is talking. You know, sometimes these kids in the classroom, they don't talk a lot. You know, you got 30 kids in the class, you know. Do you know how hard that is to actually make sure that all the curriculum is suitable for all 30 kids and that all 30 kids are making really good progress? You know, so it's really difficult. I don't think people actually realize just how hard it is. You know, differentiation in the classroom is very difficult to do. You know, and technology helps, but it's a very difficult thing to do.
On that front, are there particular platforms or apps or resources that you think assist you?
Yeah, I create a lot of content. I tell you, the Google platform is amazing. The Google platform is fantastic because it's all free. You know, that's what makes it really amazing and the stuff that you can do. But I use all the Adobe stuff. And, like, primarily what I do is I will sit down with a teacher. We will look at their curriculum. we will then take that curriculum and we will look at the places where we can inject some multimedia, and we will do so. And this goes back to the point where I said to you that I need to know a lot of different pieces of software, because you need to then know what piece of software that's going to be most applicable for what that particular teacher is using or wants to do. Because in music, it's very different from, say, in history.
Okay.
You know, and stuff. So I need to know, you know, how we're going to actually deliver the content. So then I can then do or use the right piece of software to create the content based around that particular teacher or those particular students' needs.
On those examples, so you mentioned music and history. So, for example, what kind of software would you use for both of those?
Okay, so for instance, like if I'm doing music, we could do a lot of stuff for both in something called like Adobe Presenter, which allows us, we could use something like Microsoft Mix.
Mm-hmm.
We could use something like Adobe Premiere. We could use something like Adobe Audition. So there's a lot of pieces of software, but this, again, goes back to knowing what you need to do and what you're trying to do, so then you can pick the best software that's applicable to what you're trying to do. It's just like in school. You tell kids, you know, well, we need to find the right tools. Well, unfortunately, in schools, they don't have a choice of tools. So we say, okay, these are what you could use, but this is what you're actually going to use.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford it. Schools can't afford it. You know, so it's about picking the right tool for the job that you're going to do. And there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of them out there. But the best tools that I've ever seen that I work with, you know, it comes from Adobe, they come from Apple, and they come from Microsoft. There's some really powerful tools. But then there's also tools like Camtasia, like from TechSmith.com, Camtasia Studio, which is an amazing tool that you can use to create content. You know, but there's so many companies out there.
And what does that one do that you mentioned there?
Camtasia?
Yeah.
Okay, Camtasia is amazing because what Camtasia allows you to do, it's a very simple interface and it's very, what I would call school friendly. But they also have another part that goes with it that's free. It's called Fuse. So let's say, for instance, that we're doing PE and we're out shooting students running. And then the PE teacher have recorded all this on their iPad. Well, with Fuse, what they could do is bring it back to me. We could connect via Wi-Fi, and I could then download all of those videos straight into Camtasia Studio and then edit them. You know, so instead of me going out to shoot the video, subject knowledge specialists can shoot what they need to shoot and then bring it back to me, and then we can then just get it off of the iPad straight away.
Okay, interesting. And
yeah, amazing tool.
And then we were talking earlier about, so I'm really interested in how practitioners are reducing their workload through video and audio feedback. But you were mentioning Google on that front.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of tools out there, and there's a lot of free tools out there that I mentioned a lot in my courses on Lynda.com about how we can allow students to give us feedback. But unfortunately, the negative bit of that is that in my last recollection, a lot of the boards don't accept that. You know, they want the written stuff, you know, so you can't have a student. The last time I tried to send some stuff off to a board with a video, they told me no, that they want the written stuff. Because I think a lot of times, if I'm honest about it, and I'm always honest, is that what happens is that when we send our coursework off, they don't have the necessary specialist to go through the work. So they're looking at a book or sort of like a guide book that they mark from. So, you know, it's sort of difficult if you don't have specialists who are looking at the content and grading the content.
Interesting.
And I know this as a fact.
So if people want to connect with you as well.
If they want to connect with me, it's just my Twitter handle is at Lawrence Rinaldo. Facebook is just Rinaldo Lawrence. Instagram, I think it's just Rinaldo Lawrence. You know, if you just do a search for Rinaldo Lawrence, they can get me on all the different platforms. I also do something every day that I put up on the three major platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, is where I have a positive saying for the day, videos that I put up every single day. And it's just my view on the world and how I feel about things and how I feel about being positive.
Yeah, I remember seeing those before. That's what caught my attention before. And, yeah, it's quite a nice insight into someone's life, into their morning. And a few of them recorded in the car, but not whilst you're driving.
Of course not while I'm driving. You know what's interesting is I did that when I was away, and I did it solely for my students because one of my students said, so I'm finding it hard to motivate myself. And then I was going to stop. And I got so many responses back from that thing till I don't feel as it's a chore, but I just feel an obligation because, you know, I had a lady to contact me and said to me, your video got me through the day. My family doesn't love me anymore because I put my father in a home 25 years ago and your video helped me get through the day. And I just thought, wow. And she was across the world. And so I'm just saying, you know, like we're saying, the impact of these digital tools is world stretching now. And so I just feel sort of like an obligation because my life is my life and honesty is an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And everybody doesn't have these wonderful Facebook lives that people say they've got. And I think that if you're honest with people and you let people know that you go through the same experiences that they do and things don't always turn out right, again, it goes back to that communication. It goes back to the human side of things. And it goes back to all of us are here trying to make it. I'm no better than you, regardless of what you got or regardless of what you don't have. It is about us trying to help each other, you know, build a better society. To me, that's the bottom line. And trying to ensure that these kids are good, productive citizens. And to me, that's what it's about.
And have you got any other shout outs or people you want to let others know about that have helped inspire you on your way, or either students or other peers in education or other inspirational people that you'd like to mention?
Well, I've got, there's a few people. There's a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary V is called. Now, Gary cusses a lot, so it depends on how you want to listen to Gary. But Gary is just so inspirational in terms of what he does. Gary is probably the top businessman in the world for what he does.
Yeah, he's a podcaster as well, isn't he?
Yes, he does. He has the Gary V Show. And what Gary does is that Gary runs a band of media, which is 100 million a year business. I think it's 100 million a year business. And what he does is he tries to share his knowledge with other people. The other guy that I listen to religiously is Anthony Robbins. The other guy that I listen to religiously is Eric Thomas. And there are a few others. But, you know, my morning, and then there's T.D. Jakes, and then there's Joel Osteen. So they are my mastermind group. Mm-hmm. So every morning that I get up, every morning, every night before I go to bed, what I do is I listen to those guys, you know, and there's always a message in there for me. And there's always something that I can take because I don't care who you are, man, you can't make it in this world by yourself all the time. And sometimes you just need an encouraging word. And those guys provide encouraging words for me each and every day.
Perfect. Well, unless you've got any other bits you'd like to add, I think that's about it.
One thing I would like to say, I would like to thank you for what you're doing for education, because I think sometimes when you're doing it, sometimes you're in the hustle and bustle of doing things, you forget how important what your role is. And so I think what you do is absolutely amazing. And I think you introduce other people to other people. Like some of the guys that you have in your podcast, I had no idea who they were, but I found that they are very interesting people. And wouldn't for you, I wouldn't have known. So I think you please keep doing what you're doing. And thank you so much for the opportunity that you presented to me to be on here with you. And if there's anything I could ever do, it's nothing but a word.
Well, thank you very much, Ronaldo. You put a big smile on my face. And same back. And we should definitely meet up soon. So maybe at BET in January.
That would be fantastic. That would absolutely be fantastic.
Have a wonderful weekend. You can teach me some basketball tricks.
That's a bet. That's
okay,
a deal. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye, sir.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Don't forget to check out our Facebook group and page, and you can follow us on Twitter at @PodcastEdTech, and also rate and review on iTunes by clicking rate and review. Have a great week, and see you next time.